Welcome to another episode of Connected with the Toms. I'm Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach.
I'm Dr. Tom, your number one biological doc.
And if this is your first time here, we are a podcast all about offering hope, help, and proactive health tips without a prescription. We're here to help you heal from the inside out and help you take your power back. In this podcast, we're going to talk about how stress is impacting your day-to-day behaviors and interactions with the world. So, Dad, how about you kick us off and tell us about what stress is and how it impacts our bodies?
Stress is, you know, the thing with stress is that everybody, I think the word is not a foreign word to any of our listeners, because everybody recognizes the fact that it's come up. It's being used in many and all circumstances and situations. It is recognized in standard literature, conventional social media, national news type thing, that, you know, stress over time has had and does have a considerable impact on our health. Hans Selye did work at McGill University in Montreal back in the 30s, and a lot of the stuff that's evolved in the last 90-100 years certainly stems to a great deal to do with his research and what he found about stress. And, you know, we understand a lot more about the true physiologic reaction that happens in a stress circumstance. And, you know, why is it now so common knowledge that we talk about, stress is why you get ulcers, in your stomach, or that stress is why somebody has a heart attack, or stress is why your brain doesn't work well, or stress is why you have a lot of musculoskeletal problems. I mean, the list is endless. It goes on and on. We know that chronic illness is a combination of chronic inflammation. And then if you start breaking down, well, what's causing the chronic inflammation, you can look at the fact that underlying that is most likely the component that's related to something that happened to you earlier. So as we said in an earlier podcast, you know, why an individual goes to see a physician with their present state is only a reflection of their past, of where they've come from, and it's the predictor of where they're going in the future. So stress is a physiologic reaction that affects all aspects of our physical body, all aspects of our mental and emotional body, and for all intents and purposes, our spiritual body. So stress isn't something that, you have it and you're destined to be burdened by this component. So when we look at stress, I think just a bit of from a physiology perspective, so what is happening when your body perceives stress? And I think what people don't realize is that stress is something that's, for all intents and purposes, is a learned behavior. It's a learned perception. It's a learned perception such that without telling your body, without saying, oh, this is stressful in your consciousness, your unconscious already knows what's happening. And the word cortisol will not be new to our listeners, because cortisol is the flight fright hormone that's made in our adrenal gland and is well known, well renounced. That is the so-called stress hormone. But I think before we even talk about that, we need to talk about adrenaline or epinephrine, because that is from a stimulus which is it's also made in the adrenal gland, but in the posterior as opposed to the anterior component, the medulla, I should say, not the anterior, posterior, the medulla aspect. And so before cortisol is released, the brain is already sprung into action and it's released this adrenaline. And it's released the adrenaline when it perceives that there's a stressful situation. And you know that both Julie and my, you know, strong belief is that trauma, and we can call trauma with a big T, the obvious types of traumas, or trauma with a little T that you don't even aware that it's a trauma, become ingrained into your brain. And then you have a call it a hair trigger reaction to a specific event. And so their reaction is based on something that happened in the past, generally, as I said a second ago. So you get this adrenaline release, first from your nervous system, and that's what causes your heart to speed up, your blood pressure to go up, your eyes to dilate, to start to sweat, your digestive system shuts down, and you start, you know, your mind is racing, and the 25 other things that happens physiologically to your body. Why? Because it's preparing you to defend yourself. And we can go back through history. We're talking tens of thousands of years that we have evolved as, you know, Homo sapiens. Supposedly, Homo sapiens are dating back to 310,000 years. And so over those 310,000 years, our systems have evolved in order to propagate the species, in order to survive. And in order to do that, when the body perceives that something is going to happen to it in the form of an injury, it releases adrenaline. Adrenaline starts the reaction, and later meaning it's almost instantaneously or seconds, you get the release of cortisol. Cortisol is what continues and propagates the reaction that gets started by the adrenaline or the epinephrine. Now, it's a good thing. People say, well, if it's so bad, why did we evolve this way? Well, we evolved this way because it's the only way we survived. So if you were around, 50,000 years ago, and you were being attacked by a hairy mammoth or a saber-toothed tiger, and it's like, and there's no hospitals around, what are you going to do to defend yourself? You're going to basically release this adrenaline and cortisol so that you create so-called superhuman strengths, a superhuman ability to somehow defend yourself so that you didn't die from that particular attack. So what happens is then the brain starts to learn that every time that your brain perceives that stress, get whether it's stress or not, the body releases the adrenaline and the cortisol. And that, fortunately, historically, is what causes the long-term health problems that we associated with the component that's how stress is not helpful from a survival perspective, beyond the survival aspect, because you need that in a survival mode, but wouldn't necessarily need it in most of the everyday situations. For example, if you bang your finger in the door, in the car door, you could consider that, that did not feel very good. Your body doesn't know that, why the hell are you releasing all this cortisol and all this adrenaline? You're not going to die. You're going to survive. You're uncomfortable. But that situation is no different than on the weekend going to a wedding with a colleague or with a friend. They don't know that that's not stressful. You're happy. It's joyful. And what Selye showed in his studies that if you went to 5 funerals on 5 consecutive weeks, followed by 5 weddings the next 5 weeks, there was no physiologic difference in your body's response. So interpretation is, it's a happy event. It's not stressful. Your body, unfortunately, evolved to the fact it doesn't know that. It's stressful physiologically, even if your brain, your conscious brain, says it isn't. So therefore, knowing that anything through our evolution is a component physiologically that has created this aspect of things to do that we need to be able to survive. So the focus of what we have to do that we previously talked about is how do you keep your body in more of a parasympathetic rest and relaxed state to counterbalance the sympathetic dominant state of the society in which we live. 60% of the day is typically sympathetic dominant. Ideally, 40% of the day is parasympathetic dominant, those times being when we're sleeping, hopefully for 7.5 to 8.5 hours, and then our 3 meal times, because we know that if you eat and drink during sympathetic dominance, you literally get virtually no nutritional value out of what you eat. You do get certainly calorie damage, so you can burn some energy, but you really don't get a lot of nutrition eating in a sympathetic state because you're shutting down virtually all your digestive organs. So the component of stress has been encoded into our DNA. It's encoded into our fiber and everything that the human Homo sapien observed 300,000 years ago is part of our evolution and is part of our ontogy and phylogeny that we are carrying forward all those experiences of everyone who has come before us. So how does it impact us? Dramatically. But I'll stop talking and let Julie add some information.
Oh man, I think that was all valuable information. It was good. It was really good. And stress, the perception of stress is a big issue that we need to look at, and understanding that many people today have a hard time slowing down. So that's a sign that they are in a survival sympathetic state. I mean, there's different directions that we can take this, but one question I had that when you brought up the sympathetic, parasympathetic, dominant, like 60-40 in the day, what happens if you're one of the, I'm going to kind of go on a trajectory here. What happens if you're one of these people that are parasympathetic dominant? You know, like for people in my world, when we talk about the nervous system, I talk about colors, meaning, you know, understanding sympathetic is a yellow color of your nervous system. Red is your dorsal parasympathetic. And then you have green, which is ventral. But there are some people who live in a parasympathetic, which would be a red state, meaning they live in like chronic depression, and they feel the heavier emotions like shame and depression. Yeah. What do you have to say about people that are stuck in that parasympathetic dominant state?
I would look at that differently, because if somebody, you know, you're perceiving that that state is, you know, as part of their depression. So I'm going to not talk to them about that first. I'm going to say people who live historically in a balanced place, parasympathetic, would be something like a Buddhist monk. It would be right. The Dalai Lama. And they have the ability, and, you know, these are the people that can say, you know, they're so-called breatharians. How can you be a breatharian and never eat food? You know, how do we nourish ourselves? Well, in a very calm state, everything works. It's like having everything working at a very low level, not requiring a lot of material things, we'll say. So people who are fortunate, potentially in balance, who live in a parasympathetic state will effectively live longer, because you're not putting stress on all your internal organs. You're not burning out your adrenal. You're not causing your brain to constantly be active. You're not putting extra strain on your heart. Your heart will probably be beating 50 times a minute as opposed to 72 or 80 times a minute. It's not that, oh, I need to go out and do my aerobic exercise and my resistance training and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, I can never get out of the sympathetic dominant state in which we live. The other aspect of that, so when people say, oh, well, I'm in this relaxed, you know, laid back aspect, but you're saying I'm very depressed, I said, there's something totally different.
Two worlds.
That. It's a totally different world. And I would not put that person into a chronic parasympathetic. And I label them to be so parasympathetic that they're like parasympathetic state is laid back, it's relaxed, they go with the flow, they probably do a lot of affirmation, prayer, meditation, because they're able to slow their heartbeat down, they're able to slow their breathing down, they're able to remove the chatter. They're not the people who have 80% of our self-talk is negative. They're the people who have, you know, 87% of their self-talk is positive. And they may only have 13% of their self-talk as negative, which is the opposite from what our society, situation that our society is in. So there's the more that you're parasympathetic, and obviously I don't meet people. I mean, I would love to meet the Dalai Lama, but, you know, there's just something special about these type of people. I think at some point we talked about Wim Hof, you know, and you know, I call him a freak of nature and some aspects physiologically, because what he does and is capable of doing is unique and rare, and other people can do it, but he's sort of the leader in that aspect. But it's always about the problem is, and what Sellier showed, once again, going back to the stress reaction, is that when you have a stress reaction, which I earlier described, what's supposed to happen is that after the so-called stress is removed, you go back to baseline. But in our society, what happens is before it goes back to baseline, there's another event. And so now you have another spike. And then before that, and then there's another event, and another event, and another event. And never gets back to baseline, because that's how people start to live in this chronic sympathetic dominant state. Always adrenaline. Adrenaline leads to cortisol, and you're in this vicious. And so we could say, for example, let's say you're driving to work and you're almost in a car accident, or you know, something happens and you had to stop suddenly, and you know, you sort of, that's going to be a stress reaction. So by the time you get to work, calm down, first thing you walk in the door, you know, depending what your occupation is or what you're doing, something happens, here's another stress event. We haven't got back to baseline yet. And 10 minutes later, we have another event. And then 10 minutes later, we have another event. And so these events go on throughout the day, and we never are able to return to baseline. This happens day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. And that, over a period of years and decades, unfortunately, is one of the most dramatic common causes of chronic illness, perpetuated often by a learned perception that could have happened transgenerational, could have happened in your mom, could have happened during the pregnancy, could have happened after you were born, or you know, at any age in your life. These are things that will perpetuate that fortunate illness, that chronic illness. I will say that with heart disease, specifically a heart attack, being still the number one cause of death in westernized countries anyway. And it's not only the only thing that people seem to want to talk about is your cholesterol level, and I'll lower your cholesterol level and you'll decrease the risk of a heart attack or a stroke. And I say, well, that's not my patient population. That's not why they had a heart attack. I personally would say, because 50% of people who have a heart attack are on statin drugs or on high blood pressure medicine, et cetera. They have very low cholesterol numbers, very low LDL numbers, and yet that's what they want to talk about. I would say 100% of every patient that I've seen, which unfortunately is too many, it's because they do not know how to deal with their stress. And they never took the time to either learn, or they thought they could deal with it. And unbeknownst to them, that their chronic stress was having such a negative impact on all their organ system. And almost always before in the weeks leading up to having an MI, there's some type of an event in my experience, or a continuing event that kept perpetuating. And that was the reason, in my experience, why they had a heart attack, not because their cholesterol was high or low or whatever the number is in general. So obviously, how do we treat it? Like the last 28, 29 podcasts I've shared with you is like, we just hammer home, what are you doing for yourself? The last one we talked about breathing. Have you started practicing that one? Are you doing that regularly? We talked about breathing, you know, many podcasts ago when we talked about basic treatment guidelines. So how do we keep supporting our vagus nerve, which is a parasympathetic nerve? How do we get outside? How do we drink water? How do we eat the right food? How do we get enough sleep? These are all the things that we need to do, because the goal is not to get rid of stress. In fact, you need stress to keep supporting. It's like saying, well, I'm driving a car, I guess I never have to put gas in. Well, you won't go very far. Or I never have to change my spark plugs. Or I'll put these tires on and 25 years from now, I'm still driving on the same tires. Well, I'll be driving on the rims by then. Because nothing lasts forever. And so how we continue to evolve as a species, how we continue to improve our health. Earlier podcast, you talked about removing the layers of the onion. How do we keep removing layers of the onion? It's by basically continuing to do the types of things that will allow us to remove a layer. And removing a layer involves getting our stress management under control. And the things that are supportive of one individual stress management wise may do nothing for the next person. I'm not a fan of saying, you know, what do you do on a weekend? And we still know that the statistics say, once again, the US, Canada is probably the same, about 60% of people don't like their job. So it is no surprise that the largest number of people dying of a heart attack happens on Monday morning. And that's not an accident statistically. It's well documented that that's the truth, because they know they're about to have to spend 5 days doing something that they don't enjoy doing. So what do they do on the weekend? They go and drink alcohol. They think that, you know, they're going to escape. Earlier podcast, we talked about LSD and ayahuasca, and which is sort of the new one to do, or marijuana, whatever it is. And we're not saying you should or shouldn't. We're just saying that it's not the appropriate way to learn how to deal with this chronic stress in order for you to be able to deal with what is happening to you physiologically.
I want to go back to like what you're saying in terms of like, what'd you call them? The breatharians?
Breatharians, yeah.
Breatharians. I've never heard of that before. I was today years old when I heard the word breatharian. But anyway, in the polyvagal theory, so like for the trauma-informed people that are listening to this, polyvagal theory, what you're referencing, Dad, is the ventral vagal nervous system. So it's that top part. And the thing is, it's still really new because it was only really discovered in 1994. So it's still relatively young. So that's why in terms of, you know, if we're looking at our nervous system, we're talking about stress, the ventral vagal system is what we're looking for. But ultimately, something that comes up for me when we're talking about like stress levels is, I think for me, the biggest piece of the puzzle was bringing awareness. And I think the problem is that many of us are so busy, air quotes, in our lives, and we have access to so much information that it is scary to slow down. And I recognize that many people, like when you're in a survival state, slowing down is very uncomfortable. But we have to start with awareness. So we have to start with understanding, like, okay, what is going in my stress bucket? I've talked about the stress bucket, also known as the threat bucket, in other podcasts. But what I wanted to do today is just offer you right here, right now, an opportunity for you to rate your stress bucket in 10 different categories. So these are categories that I work on with clients. It's my perception of, these are the 10 top things that people tend to have a lot of stress in. So what I'd like you to do as the listener is actually rate your stress on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being it doesn't stress me out at all, and 10 being, yeah, this is my thoughts and my energy and my mental and my physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional energy. There's a lot of effort here and it's stressing me out a lot. Okay. So the first category is movement. So I want you to think about, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well do you move your body from day to day? So, you know, like my dad goes for walks every day, like 400 and what, how many days? 420 something, 21 days, 421 days. My dad has not missed a walk. So my dad's, so, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, rate your, like, am I able to move? Do I move pain free? All that type of stuff. So this is your own perception. Okay. So this is important to understand, like, in your brain right now, what do you think, how much is movement affecting your life? Next one is diet. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much is your diet stressing you out? Okay. Next category is finances. How much are your finances on a scale of 1 to 10 stressing you out? Just think about it. There's going to be a number, and like, just think about like finances. Oh my God, I think about it all the time. It stresses me out. Everything's so expensive. You know, like how much energy is going towards your paying your bills and the money coming into your world. Next one is work. My dad just said the average, like, what was the percentage? How many 60. People? 60% of people hate their work. So are you scoring it a 10 or are you scoring it a 1? Are you one of the 60%? Or are you in the middle? I'm like, I kind of like my job, kind of not, whatever. I know my dad's probably a 1. No, maybe a 2, because he's trying to see all his patients before he goes on holiday. So anyway, sleep would be your next category. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does your sleep stress you out? You know, like, are your behaviors when around sleep, do you wake up in the middle of the night? Are you just getting up to pee? Or are you waking up and staying awake? Or are you having a hard time falling asleep? Rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 for that one. Next one's going to be trauma. So a lot of people are like, what do you mean? when you've had a big T or even a little T and you bring awareness to the trauma that you've experienced in your life, how much does that consume you? And how much do you think about, like, when you have that awareness? Like for me, once I had awareness that, oh my gosh, I did have trauma. I do have trauma that happened to me in my life. How much does that consume you on a scale of 1 to 10 for your life? Next one's lifestyle. So how you live day to day, what does your lifestyle on a scale of 1 to 10? Are you doing, like, are you being social? Are you connected with the community? That sort of thing, like your lifestyle. Are you doing the things that you want to do that make you feel happy or not stressed out? Next one's relationships, or this is going to be with your partner because family is the last category. So what is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your relationships with your partner or friends? Okay. Yeah. Again, go along with the community part, but are you someone that likes to socialize or not? And is it stressful for you? Next one is energy. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your energy levels? And the last one, like I said, is family. So what you're going to do is you're going to score, that's out of 100. So what you're going to do is you're going to add up all your numbers, and that is your stress bucket rating for now, your perception of your stress out of 100. So what you want to do is recognize that, hey, I didn't realize that, I don't know, my relationships are stressing me out as much as it is, because it all starts with awareness, and that can be impacting your day-to-day life. So what we want to be able to do is that have that awareness first and foremost. And then from here, we can come up with a plan to help you manage your stress, like my dad was talking about, right? So many of us aren't even aware of what are the things that I can do to manage my stress. Well, all the basic treatment guidelines are fantastic. You know, getting out, getting some sunshine, nature. There's lots of different things, grounding, humming, singing, music. For me, it's really helping people understand sensory. Your nervous system really loves your senses. Like, that's how we communicate with the autonomic nervous system. So do you like being, like in Arizona, it's extremely hot right now. So cold is a commodity there. So, you know, when you open the fridge, you probably stand there, or you open the freezer, you probably stand there for a few more seconds because you're like, oh my God, this feels so good, right? You feel that shift. And that is what you can do. Like, when you start bringing in these opportunities for you to start feeling a little bit safer, this is how we start bringing understanding, like, oh, that did make me feel good. Which brings me to the next thing. If you have not done this yet, I'm going to recommend, again, awareness, is, have you done a trigger sheet? Do you know what triggers you? So this is a joke I use. It's not a joke, but it's because it's true, but it's kind of funny, is Mariah Carey stresses me out. When I hear her voice, my nervous system, I get, it's like the hair on the back of my neck goes up. It's like, oi, it gives me a little shiver. And it's that pitch. I realize that I don't like that pitch. But because I have that awareness, I actually made a reels using her music to prove a point that, yes, you know, I know that her sound and that pitch stresses me out, but it doesn't mean I have to avoid it, right? When we understand what our triggers are, it's not if, it's when. And when you know what your trigger, like what's triggering, like, oh, this triggered me. Okay, what can I do to bring in then a glimmer? So if you don't know what a glimmer is, we talked about the ventral nervous system. Glimmers are things that help you feel safe again. Glimmers are things that help you feel green, or that ventral state that help you feel, become a breatharian. I'm gonna keep using that word, and help you feel like reset and feel, help you feel calm. So like my dad going for a walk, that's a glimmer for him. My dad petting his puppies and his dogs is a glimmer. Traveling is a glimmer for my dad. So these are examples that you want to know, like, what are things that help you feel safe in your body? What are things that make you happy? What are things that make you enthusiastic or connected? Or, you know, going to church might be a glimmer. Connecting with a friend, phoning a friend, you know, whatever, reading, journaling, gratitude, all these type of things. What we want to do is you want to start writing a list. If you haven't done so, I highly, highly recommend you start, you know, chipping away at it and understanding, like, oh my God, yeah, Mariah Carey does make my hair stand up too. Now you know, right? Or maybe not, and that's okay, right? And so maybe it's a certain color, maybe it's a certain place, maybe it's like people are like, I don't like dark. Like, my kids always ask, Mom, why do you hate Halloween? And I don't, it's not that I hate Halloween. It's like, I don't like the feeling of being scared. So Halloween is all about horror and scary things, and I don't like that feeling. So I don't want to invite myself, like that feeling, but because I'm aware of it now, I'm like, oh, this is why I never really got into it. And that's okay. But that's why I love Christmas, because of all the colors, and I love multicolors. Like, I still have a Christmas little ceramic Christmas tree at my front door because I like colors. So that's a glimmer. So when you're aware of the stuff, this is how you can start bringing things in, so you can create more of these opportunities to drop your stress and draw and bring in more of these parasympathetic snacks, as I've talked about before, or bring you opportunities to come back to homeostasis. So anyway, that's what I have to say for today. Do you want to say anything else, Dad?
Once again, just, you know, what you've added is, I mean, I hope the listeners appreciate it, the valuable stuff that we have so much possible control over something that's inevitable, and stress is inevitable, but it doesn't have to be sort of a so-called life sentence. It isn't something that is destined to doom and gloom, because, you know, a few weeks ago, I was stranded in an airport on the East Coast for 3 days. And it's like, well, you can doom and gloom about it, but it's like, yeah, you do it best you can. And it's like, oh, well, it's like it didn't do some stuff I would have otherwise done, but, you know, did it change my life? Not really. You know, yeah, it was a little busier, obviously, when I came home, but, you know, it happens. That's what's going to happen. And it's like, I could have freaked out, as there were definitely other people freaking out. I can literally, as they were trying to get rebooked on another flight, they're raising their voice and screaming and yelling. And it's like, really, it's unfortunate that the agent that they had to deal with, it wasn't their fault. They're just there to do a job. So it's like, you go and it's like, what's the best you got? Okay, that's what I got to do. Then that's what I got to do. And you go with the punches as much as you possibly can, I think, is an attitude about life. There are some things that many things can be stressful. So it's not the stress. I want to emphasize, it's not the stress that's the problem. It's your reaction to the stress that's the issue. And how you learn to respond to stress will have an incredibly significant impact on your health, in either a positive way or a not so positive way. And what we are trying to share with you is the fact you can take the realities of stressful circumstances and situations that happen, deal with the circumstance and situation. It may be, you know, it may be sad, it may be happy. Body doesn't know any difference what it is. But what we do with it is what has the impact long term on your health. And that's really what the intention of what this particular podcast was about.
Awesome. Yeah. Like, I just want to reiterate, like, awareness brings understanding, and understanding brings choice. And I think that's a big piece of the puzzle, that many of us feel like we don't have choices, and we have a choice on how we respond to any situation. Like, my dad could have freaked out. He'd do a little Terminal. Did you watch the Terminal when you were there? Download all the movies and watch the Terminal. Like, I feel, you know, him.
I didn't watch it, but I certainly thought about Tom Hanks in that movie, as he lived in the Terminal. It was like, and he said, well, he managed it and he lived here a long time. I was here for 3 days.
Right. And exactly. So, you know, there's always an opportunity to learn and to connect with other people, because you're not the only one you're not the only one that got stranded, right? At the end of the day. So sure, again, awareness brings understanding, brings choice. And that's something that I brought up in my community, and they're like, we got to put that on a t-shirt, because honestly, you have a choice. And so there's lots of opportunities for you to choose on how you want to take a proactive approach to your healing. And all you got to do is listen to our podcast. So yay. And connect with us. If you have any questions or comments or have ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. We're always looking for ideas to help you dive in and understand your body a little bit better. One topic that came up, Dad, is perimenopause. We did talk about the menopause belly, but I have a friend going through some perimenopause symptoms. So I thought it'd be, but she's having a really hard time finding information. So I thought it'd be really helpful for her if we can dive into the world of perimenopause, because it's a very specific time in a woman's life. But there's not a lot of information out there. So I thought we'd contribute to that world. Are you good with doing that for our next podcast?
Absolutely. And remember, this is not just for women, because, you know, because the partner is experiencing the symptoms as his partner is experiencing it, or his mother or sister or whatever. And so males are equally involved in perimenopause as the individual who is experiencing that period of transition in their life, for sure.
It's a good point. Yes, exactly. So I think, yeah. So we're going to talk about that in the next podcast. So please stay tuned. And like I said before, if you have any questions or comments, please get in touch with us. Everything is in the show notes. And if this is your first time listening, I hope you enjoyed our chat. And we hope to you come back next time to listen all about perimenopause. All right. I hope you have a beautiful day. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.